Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
You've built a great podcast. The content's solid. The audience is growing. But the money? Still not where it should be. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your podcast for free so you can keep doing your thing while our experienced sales team does their thing, finding advertisers and bringing in revenue. No fees, no stress, just real monetization. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.
I thought there was a beat drop coming here. There's not. All right. Well, that's all right. You know what we should have done based on the conversation? There it is. It would have been a while, though. You know what we should have done, though, today, Joe? We should have grabbed songs from, like, your Apple Music or my Spotify most listened to and used those as drops. Just the music only.
Yeah. Still could.
Still have an hour. Still time. Well, not really. We have Paul Hamilton coming up next.
So little to do, so much time.
Maybe
strike
just,
that. You know, reverse it.
We'll bring it into tomorrow. How's that? There's the deal. So, a little bit of a pseudo sports talk Saturday sort of thing here is I've got Joe Kelly on the board. Usually I have Zach Jones here for this show on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, but Joe and I typically do a lot of these things every weekend of nonsense, tomfoolery, but also plenty of sports talk. And when it comes to everything of, like, my personal resignation of the division and kind of accepting it, it's still gross that it's New England. But it would have been gross no matter what. Like, if it was Miami, for example, you'd be like, you really let them actually get a step up on you this time? And then if it was the Jets, it's like, okay, how? Like, clearly the world is doomed. Because the only other choice then is New England. And it makes the most sense. Joe, I have to say, though, you did call it that New England would be a double-digit win team this year.
Oh, yeah. I think I had 11-plus in the beginning of this year.
You were ahead of the game.
Yeah, I was nervous about them. I think it was really that first matchup that they had with the Bills last year.
You loved their schedule and said they're going to win a bunch of games because their schedule is bad.
Part of me, though, thought the Bills would win 14 games.
Here's the thing.
Which can't happen now.
That is mathematically not possible. You are correct. But I don't blame you for thinking that, though, because on paper, and even now still looking past those games, Atlanta is one of the most frustrating losses that you're ever going to see.
Yeah, imagine if you win that, then you could mathematically win 14 games. It's kind of crazy.
And then Miami is a loss that really you shouldn't have had that either. And it's the way you lost to Miami that was really the most frustrating thing about it. So, yes, you had a bit of a premonition.
Yes.
Not that the Bills would lose the division, obviously, but you definitely were worrying about New England.
Yeah, I mean, they're here, right? Like, yep. Let's think about this. They are more than likely going to win the division. I told you, I have an emotional hedge here. I do have money on the Bills to win the division, and I did it before they lost to the Texans. So
that's
we're
fair.
Still riding with that. There's no cash out
offering,
available
yeah, they're
anymore.
They're not offering you a cash out for that.
So we're still rooting for it, but a lot has to happen, and I just don't think it will. I don't think New England's going to slip up. But
you know you're not getting that money back.
No, and they're going to do everything they can. Jeremy and Joe were talking about this earlier today. They're going to do everything they can so Stephon Diggs can wear the division champion hat in New England and shake hands with all of his old teammates. Like, that's definitely where this is heading, storyline-wise. So,
yes.
Mac Hollins as well, right? Maybe not as in your face as Diggs.
Not as spiteful, correct.
Yeah, but I don't know. They're going to be an issue for the foreseeable future. Maybe a first-place schedule changes that.
And
it might.
The beautiful thing about it is that now next year, the Bills would have a second place schedule for the first time since 2020.
Yeah. And you look at other quarterbacks who have taken their division by storm, these rookies and sophomores, right? The first year that they're good, they're good. But then, yes. Like, C.J. Stroud has not been the same since his hot start.
Correct. And C.J. Stroud's been downright bad.
Right. Caleb Williams.
Since the Caleb Williams thing of, like,
yes, you know, little bro.
You'll learn from this, little bro. And yeah. It's like, all right, well, what did you learn, C.J.? Because right now it looks like you didn't. And
yeah,
there's a little bit of an egg on the face for that moment for him right now.
Jaden Daniels is in that conversation, too. He's kind of regressed from
where
he was.
He's taken a lot of the injuries that many were fearful of about him.
Mm-hmm.
Of, you know, he ran too fast and loose at LSU, and the way I deemed it was he took comically bad hits.
Oh, yeah.
Turns out that that's actually Jackson Dart.
Right.
But
a lot of times these guys who hit the league by storm in their first season,
they can be enough film. And it's pretty much for the entirety of the class, I think, save for Drake May, that has suffered this.
Yeah. Bo Nix.
Bo Nix has hit a massive regression to a point where you can't trust the Broncos offense drive to drive, even play to play, for Bo Nix to do the right thing. Michael Penix Jr. has another major injury now, but he was mired with inconsistency when he was healthy this year. J.J. McCarthy, I don't think I need to say any more. There's enough chatter that Minnesota might already move on from him after only one season.
Bryce Young, how inconsistent
Ooh,
he is.
That's a spicy meatball.
He's turning up a little bit, though.
I like that, though. Yeah, I don't know if Carolina gets rid of him right away. I don't think they offer him a massive extension, but I think they let him play out the rookie deal. They probably pick up the player option and go, you have a chance to prove yourself to us. But even then, other quarterbacks like Trevor Lawrence, he has a bad rookie season because of Urban Meyer, but then he kind of picks it up. And it, again, the film on him, it goes to show that development really is such an important aspect that you do need to make sure that you have the right pieces in place. And while Josh Allen has switched up coordinators now several times, that happened after the development has peaked for him. The development turning him into the quarterback that he is today. It really does matter there. Andy Reid with Patrick Mahomes, like just how they were able to make that sort of thing work. Lamar Jackson, working primarily under the same coordinator for a while in the start of his career with Greg Roman, still allowing him to do what he is incredible at in both sides of the game of running and throwing the football, and allowing Jackson to become more comfortable. I do rag on Roman sometimes for what I think are simplistic passing concepts, but that can make a quarterback pretty dang comfortable too, as they're in the league and trying to learn it. Learn the speed, learn the timing, and then you have a coordinator that's got some newbie-friendly concepts. But now you look at Drake May in New England, and where that has gone, where it started, and how we're getting here. New England admitted that they didn't have the head coach and fired him right away. Typically, that sort of chaos often leads to regression from a quarterback the next year because of the fact that they've swapped out a coach and things are changing right away and you need to adjust already to a new system, right? Well, the bad news is consistently fantastic Patriots offensive coordinator Josh McDaniel gets fired from another head coaching job and is able to come back and develop this quarterback. Josh McDaniels has a hard time getting it done with Mac Jones, but he's still also able to get a job and ruin the Raiders, come back to New England. And now he gets to be the tutor for Drake May. I don't think McDaniels ever gets hired for another head coaching job. The way he has fried three different franchises, the Broncos, the Colts, by the way, everyone forgets when he went back on that job offer. And then the Raiders, I don't think any other team is going to ever ask Josh McDaniels to be a head coach anywhere in the NFL. So Drake May probably has his offensive coordinator for his career. But it's the fact that New England knew that they made a mistake with Gerard Mayo as the head coach. He was too young. He's not ready for the role. And then they go out and they get Mike Vrabel. Vrabel has always been a good coach. I've always thought that he has a ceiling to him. But that ceiling is more in the postseason. It's not about the regular season. He's a good coach. He got the Titans to a number one seed once. If you can get the Tennessee Titans to a number one seed, there's enough tape there. You're a good coach. And yet he's the one that loses a power struggle to a bad general manager who then trades A.J. Brown, by the way. I don't understand that. We'll never understand that. But it's going to be a problem. New England's going to be a long-term problem, even with facing a first-place schedule next year, Joe, because of the fact that they have the pieces in place that are going to be here for a while. If Vrabel's succeeding right away, I'd imagine this is going to buy him a nice little bit of leeway. McDaniels is never getting hired as a head coach anymore, anywhere. That means that the offensive coordinator is in place for a long time. The quarterback is in his second year. He's going to be here for a long time. And as long as management continues to draft well for the Patriots and picks up the proper building pieces, yeah, Buffalo and New England are going to be back in this tug of war for the division. I say back as if they've done this. And they really historically have not. The only tug of war, quote unquote, is the Bills yanked it away from them the minute that Brady walked away. Said, we'll take this. I'm not mad at it. I do, however, want to make sure that the Bills do what they can to say, no, we're still here. We are still a powerhouse. You caught us napping. So the long-term viability of New England versus Buffalo is going to be there for a little bit, at the very least through Josh Allen's career. And maybe there is a little bit of a difference. New England does play that first-place schedule as a young team, and they do find themselves in a little bit of a struggle. But this year, or this offseason, they have more cap space to fight with when it comes to building their roster. They have a player on a rookie contract under center. So they are going to be able to try to shape this in their favor for the next few years to be a problem consistently. So whatever happens from here with the future of the AFC East, it has to do more with Buffalo's actions going forward. They're a good enough team that it's still going to be a nice back and forth affair for several years. And it will depend on Buffalo's actions in the off seasons to see just how successful it will be in Buffalo's favor going forward. New England's not going anywhere, unfortunately. And I hate saying that. It makes me feel gross. I need a shower already. But just because New England's taking the division this year doesn't mean that all's lost. Obviously. It just means that you need to stay sharp. A division rival has caught you, surpassed you for a year, and now you need to go ahead and figure it out. Nobody's going to wait for you. Everything has to go forward from there. As for the rest of this year, I still am disappointed that there is no guaranteed playoff game at Highmark Stadium. If they do it, it's from wild circumstances. The Bills move up in seeding, and as a 5 seed, it means that every division winner is a disappointment. If the Bills host a playoff game at any point in the postseason, it's because everyone that won a division is a disappointment. And the Bills move up in the playoff seeding. What Sales said last hour resonates true, though, which is Right now, you still just got to focus on making sure you get into the playoffs. Make sure that there is an X next to the name for a playoff berth. If you don't do that, none of this matters. But I am still a little sad about the fact that this Sunday is one of the final three games in that building. Yes, I know the next one is right across the street, but that's why I say building. Because location is not necessarily what I would say about this. It's that it is an old building. There's a lot of memories in there. There's a lot of, we'll call it character in there. There's a lot of stories in there. For better or for worse, there was the entirety of a 17-year playoff drought's worth of stories in there. You don't necessarily worry about the football that was played in those 17 years that they are not making the playoffs. You are there about the stories inside that stadium. Because that's what kept you coming. It wasn't the football. It was the community. It was the people. It was the place. That's the part that I'm at least the most sad at, is that it's going to go out with a little bit of a whimper. Bills are still a playoff team. I think they're strong enough quarterback-wise, and they're in a better position than the other teams that are not in that spot, looking at you, Kansas City, and or Baltimore. But the Bills are the one that's in the most favorable spot of the three of those, the old powers, so to say, quote-unquote. But it just goes to show that you have to be ever-evolving. New England's going to be here for several years going forward now. And it's going to be a tight battle. The division is no longer the cakewalk that it was for the last 4 years. But the evolution is still there. Outside of Jacksonville, the NFL standings in the AFC, you're looking at the top two teams in the AFC, New England and Denver. They're working with rookie contracts. Jacksonville's working with, I'm pretty sure Trevor Lawrence is the second highest paid quarterback in the league, therefore the second highest player paid in the league, and that contract is easily not worth it. The Ravens have Jackson, but they may not even win the division. The Chargers have Herbert. And then there's the Colts, the Texans, teams working with a little bit of a budget at quarterback. It just goes to show you that the margin of error is much thinner for the teams that were in power as of just last year. The margin of error is that much thinner. That the team with the best record between Baltimore, Kansas City, and Buffalo is the Bills themselves. And at 8-4, they are a frustrating bunch. And in the NFC, it's pretty much the same thing. But the NFC doesn't really have those kinds of contracts either. Not a lot of them. Dak Prescott's got a big boy contract. But Goff is not a top market quarterback. Jordan Love does have that contract. Green Bay's at the 6. Brock Purdy's got that contract. San Fran's at 7th. Darnold, Mayfield, Hurts, who has been wildly inconsistent this year, Stafford, Caleb Williams. The margin of error is thinner all of a sudden because teams are running the football more. Teams are playing a little bit more of a balance. And it shows that there's a little bit of a tide shift sometimes within the NFL. And how do you get through it? You got to be able to hit when you're getting in your draft picks. So let's see what happens going forward. It will be fascinating. The rest of this season is going to be a bit of a ride itself. A little uncomfortable. Not getting the AFC East. And however it goes from there is however it goes from there. Meanwhile, We'll talk with Paul Hamilton in about eight-ish minutes. So I do want a little preview about what Paul and I are going to talk about here. The Sabres start their six-game road trip tonight, and it's a little bit of a crossroads for them. This is an opportunity for the Buffalo Sabres to kind of define their season. The Sabres are sitting here 2-6-2 on the road this year. The worst road record in the league, as a matter of fact. It's not just the Eastern Conference. They have the worst road record in the NHL with 2 wins on the season and a total of 4 points. And now you go on a six-game road trip. If you don't fix these road woes, this is a second season in a row where you're dead by Christmas. They need, and Joe, you had a lot of fun making sure that snark cannon was there when Jeremy said must win, which has been kind of a curse this year. Mm-hmm. Every time that the morning show has said it's must win territory for this game here, whatever it be, say it's the game against Calgary or any other time that they've said must win, it hasn't really gone well. The Sabres typically did not deliver on that sort of ideal, and then the next morning the guys are like, okay, what happened? We said it was must win, and they definitely did not do that. And I don't know if necessarily this game is must win in itself. You do want to start a road trip right. But you don't start your Western Canada trip until you go to Winnipeg anyway. You're not starting that part of the trip until the next game. What is must-do territory for the Sabres here is going to be trying to get out of this road trip 500 or better. First of all, if you go 500 on this road trip, you will more than have doubled your road win total for the year. That's a really sobering stat, isn't it? But the Atlantic Division also is, I've joked off air, it's the one where like you're crossing, you see the ducks crossing and you see the slowest duckling in the back. That's the entirety of the Atlantic Division. The two-time defending Stanley Cup champions are in last place in the Eastern Conference. That is what the Atlantic Division is. The Sabres are 4 points out of an automatic playoff spot in second place in the East. So when I say it's a crossroads, I mean it. And we'll talk more with Paul Hamilton about the crossroads facing the Sabres coming up next here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. But first, Tailgate Trivia is back. It's presented by Total Sports Enterprises Buffalo. Listen during every Bills game for your chance to call in, answer the trivia question, and win autographed Bills merch courtesy of TSE Buffalo. We'll be right back talking with Paul Hamilton coming up next.
It's Paul Hamilton. He has the facts to back up his opinions. On WGR Sports Radio 550.
It's such a pure laugh. Paul Hamilton, anytime you're able to get him to chuckle along, it's one of the better sounds that you can have in all of radio there. Also, just the voice of Paul Hamilton is a fantastic sound for radio, and that's exactly what we have here on the Western Hotline. Paul, welcome in, and you are out there in Philadelphia.
I am.
And I'd be no less surprised, of course, about that, Paul. Sabres starting a six-game road trip here tonight against the Philadelphia Flyers. Puck drop at 7:30. Pregame will start at 6:30 here on WGR. Paul, the Sabres head on the road, and I call it a little bit of a crossroads for the season. They have the worst road record in the National Hockey League. They've only won twice away from KeyBank Center. And now here you are, six games on the road. And I would imagine that, ideally, you want to try to at least pick up half of these games on the six-game road trip because, A, it more than doubles your road win total on the season, but, B, More importantly, it allows you to get back into the thick of things in an Atlantic division that refuses to leave anyone behind.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
You've built a great podcast. The content's solid. The audience is growing. But the money, still not where it should be. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your podcast for free so you can keep doing your thing while our experienced sales team does their thing, finding advertisers and bringing in revenue. No fees, no stress, just real monetization. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.
Behind right now.
Well, they have won two of their last three on the road, but this is actually a weather crossroads for them. Do you realize 40 degrees in Philadelphia today, Friday in Winnipeg, it'll be minus -9.
Oh, that's Winnipeg's infamously frigid, though. Paul, if you're going, make sure you've got the extra parka and the other extra parka.
I've been there once when it was over zero. Fahrenheit. And it was actually in the 40s. It was a heat wave.
Yeah, right. Because
usually it's like minus 22 in Winnipeg, and then it's like going to Miami to Minnesota at minus 4.
Oh, my God.
That time it was 42 in Winnipeg. You could actually walk outside because Winnipeg is a city. You can walk inside.
Mm-hmm.
But it takes you like 25 minutes to walk to the arena. I found out if you walk outside, it only takes 10. When it was 40 degrees out.
You just don't want to walk outside more often than
that. The warmest I had ever been in Winnipeg before that was minus 11.
Oh, my God.
That had been the warmest I had ever been. It had been as cold as minus 27 overnight at some point in Winnipeg. And then I got there in the 40s once. And then we got to Minnesota. It was 63. It was like, wow.
Yeah,
how did this happen?
Talk about a heat wave.
How did we get Winnipeg and Minnesota at 42 and 63? But no, not this time. Minus -9.
Not this time around. But Paul, speaking of minus -9, there's nobody on the team with that kind of plus minus rating. But that's close to their goal differential, oddly enough. This Atlantic Division, though, Paul, it refuses to leave people behind. It refuses to leave teams behind. Matter of fact, so much so that the defending champion Florida Panthers, wrong sport, Derek. The defending champion Florida Panthers are in last place in the Atlantic, and Buffalo is only 4 points out of the top three there in the division. So this is an opportunity, though, for them, because this division refuses, outside of Tampa Bay, to get going.
Well, I tend to go by points percentage because it takes games in hand out of the equation. So points percentage, they are tied with the Florida Panthers for dead last in the Eastern Conference at 500. And the problem here is the Sabres have been left behind, and I'll tell you why. They've won 6 out of 9 games, so they've picked up 12 out of 18 points. 12 out of 18. And haven't passed anybody.
Mm-hmm.
They're still tied for last place in the Eastern Conference. They caught Florida, but they haven't passed them at 500. So that just shows you the magnitude of the hole they have dug for themselves. They have picked up 12 out of 18 points and haven't passed anybody.
And Paul,
now, they can't do much better than that. I can't see this team ripping off a 10-game winning streak. I just don't think they have that in them. So they can't do much better than 12 out of 18 points. So how are they going to move up here? How are they going to catch anybody? How are they going to get into playoffs? I mean, it is just a huge hole that they dug for themselves, and that once again, they did it before Thanksgiving. They always have done it before Christmas, almost every year but one. But there have been a couple, including this one, where they've dug the hole before Thanksgiving.
Paul, one of the reasons for that hole, though, is the road performance. As you mentioned, they've won two of their last three on the road, but it has still become the worst road record in hockey, and it's by a lot. Now you have six games in a row away from KeyBank Center where it is probably imperative to this team that they at least go 500 here on a Western Canada trip.
Maybe the win in Minnesota, when you go in there on a back-to-back, you had to travel. They didn't. They back-to-back, but it was two home games. And you beat a team that had won seven in a row on the road when you had to do the traveling. And also change time zones. Back-to-backs, you normally don't change time zones. They did. So maybe that win can show them that, you know, they're capable of winning on the road. The other win, they play one period and won the game. One period and an overtime. They were behind 4-1. They came back in the third period and won the hockey game. Well, actually, they got the second goal right near the end of the second period. And then won the game, tied it, did something they hadn't done in, eight years. And came back from a three-goal deficit to win and then won that game. So two of their last three games on the road, they have done things that could give them some confidence. Now, Pittsburgh would not give you confidence. That game was there for the taking if you wanted it. They didn't get any points at all from a team they're chasing. And as Lindy Ruff said, that was an okay game. But still, okay usually isn't good enough, but it almost was. They had some outnumbered chances in the third period to tie the game and couldn't. You know, when the game was 3-2, of course, the empty netter, every time the Sabres pull their goal, the empty netter goes in. I mean, that's just Sabre hockey. They have not scored 6-on-5 yet this year, but they've given up 9 on 6-on-5 and have led the league for two straight years in that category. I don't know why they are so horrendously bad when they pull a goalie, but it's a done deal. It's going in their net. In Pittsburgh, at least they had two or three really good chances. They normally don't even get that. They usually just give the puck away, and it's a breakaway into your empty net, and that's that. But I've never seen a team this bad. It's even if they had been competing the whole game, for whatever reason, they don't compete when it's 6-on-5. They basically lose all the battles. They lose the faceoffs and lose all the battles, and it's in their net. I've just never seen anything like it.
Paul, one of the ways to help out, though, with a little bit of the face-off woes that they have is getting back a player that's really good in the circle, and that's Josh Norris. He comes back in a big way against Winnipeg with two goals, an assist, and effectively, Paul, we talked about how they were ravaged with injury with their top six in particular and lost two-thirds of their starting line. This is the top line that was promised to us and showed the flashes in the preseason between Norris, Thompson, and Zach Benson.
Yeah, I mean, Josh Norris is, you know, normally a very good face-off person. Now he's only played two games and is 41%, so that's not a big, you know, that's basically two games that he's played and was 41%. That will improve. I'll guarantee that.
Yeah, his career tells you.
What's that?
His career tells you it'll go back up.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The guy who, when he played, it was, again, only four games. I wasn't all that impressed with him other than faceoffs, was Justin Danforth. He was 54.8, and throughout his career he's been good at faceoffs. So with him out of the lineup, they do miss that part of him. You know, McLeod is way down. He was much better last year. He's at 45.5. So they really don't have guys. I mean, Greenway played center for a game or two, is at 58.3, but again, he hasn't taken that many draws. So Norris has to be that guy. And, you know, he'll be well over 50%.
Now, looking, though, at the chemistry of that line, though, Norris, Thompson, Benson. Thompson had been playing pretty well at center, at least offensively. He was getting back into a groove of things. He had a six-game goal-scoring streak. It did look like Thompson was finding his offensive game again. But then Norris comes back in the lineup, and Tage has moved back to the wing, and that's the confidence that they have in the player that they made this trade for last year. And it's delivered on almost immediately when he draws in the lineup.
Yeah, and Thompson last year on the wing, his, as Lindy Ruff said, his numbers, his analytic numbers are much better on the wing. And he did score 44 goals in the wing last year.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like he's a complete bust there. You know, and I think he'll be fine on the wing with Norris as his centerman. You know, I think, you know, that they'll combine and be just fine playing that way. So, I mean, people were all, why are they moving Thompson? Well, the Doan, Thompson, and Tuck line had kind of played out. They weren't playing as well. And Norris is not a winger. Tage can play the wing. Norris is not a winger. You didn't trade for Norris for him to play the wing. You know, so that's why Tage is over in the wing. And again, Lindy Ruff said the numbers will tell you Tage is a much better winger than he is a centerman.
So, Paul, when it comes to it, though, tonight, Colton Ellis from practice, it looked like he had his own net yesterday in practice, the indication that he would be the guy starting tonight. This three-goalie rotation, it's another year of being agitated by the Sabres carrying three goalies once again, at least in my eyes. But even you're starting to hear it a little bit from Lindy Ruff of, it sounds like he wants one of these guys to take the reins and there to be a decision made on what can you do about this roster when you're carrying three goalies again.
Yeah, and it's hard to get somebody. Now, I think Luukkonen's getting in a groove. He has, I'm going by memory, I believe I wrote the other day that in his last six games, his goals against is 2.21, and he has a save percentage around 910, something like that. So his last six games, if you put them together, five of them are starts. The other one was he didn't play the first 6 minutes. That was the one where Lyon
in Colorado. Yep.
And so he played most of the game. He just didn't start it. And so you're starting to maybe get a little consistency out of him. I mean, his goals against is really good. His save percentage still isn't great. 899 is not a good save percentage. But a 2.51 is much better than Ellis or Lyon, who are both well over three. And it's funny, the Sabres are an 899 save percentage team. Ellis is 898, Luukkonen is 899, and Lyon is 899. So I think we have a pretty good gauge on what these goalies are as far as save percentage. They're an 899 save percentage team when it comes to that. So, yeah, I did like the way Ellis came back in Minnesota. He had to sit in that Calgary game for a while, and I didn't like that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he was going to play that Friday against Chicago anyway because it was time to give him a rest. But I would have thrown him in on that Sunday game. Absolutely. I wouldn't want that kid. He only had one bad game. And I wouldn't want that kid sitting on that game. Now, as it turned out, he was fine. He played very well in Minnesota. Should have got one of the stars as I almost said North Stars, because they were wearing those North Star jerseys.
That's right, yeah.
As was the Wild's goaltender, too. Nice looking jerseys, by the way.
They are.
I thought both of them should have been stars, even though they both kind of fell apart in the shootout. But, he made two phenomenal saves on Faber in the overtime, because remember, Tage Thompson blew a tire behind the net. He's totally out of the play. So it's 3-on-2 the other way, all the way up ice. Faber, he has to make a great save on Faber off the 3-on-2. And then Faber gets the puck and comes right back at him all by himself, basically. And he makes a great save on that one. So, I he only faced three shots in the third period. But the first one in the first minute was Boldy, who's been red hot from the slot. He was open in the slot, and he made a big save there. So, you know, what Lindy Ruff talks about, the big saves at the big time, he didn't face oodles of shots, so to speak. But he did make some big saves along the way against a team that had won seven straight games and knows how to put the puck in the net. So I thought that was a very good rebound game for him. Now, Lindy Ruff said the reason you didn't see him last game, they were in the plane, as Lindy Ruff put it, for like, what did he say, 4 to 6 hours?
Ooh.
So I'm wondering, was it weather? Because the weather was not great in Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
So did they get held up by weather or a mechanical problem with the plane or something like that? So he said the earliest anybody would have gotten to bed was like 4:30 in the morning. And so Ellis has battled back spasms at times. So he just did not, with that kind of rest or no rest, He didn't want to throw him right back in, so that became a Lukanen game. And Ellis now is back for this one.
It does look like, Paul, and this is the last thing we got to get going here, but I am intrigued about how they are going to handle this rotation going forward, because even Lindy Ruff a couple games ago had mentioned that the difficulty of having three goalies on the roster and trying to coach
that
it.
Probably four or five times. Yep. He's that one just, for some whatever reason, caught people's attention. It's about the fifth time he's said it.
Yeah.
So he's been pretty consistent about that.
Yeah, and we'll see what happens. There's got to be a move made, but all we can do is
gotta.
Yeah.
What did somebody fire the GM and I missed it?
I'm going to keep saying they've got to do it, but you know, we'll see. All we can do is project.
He gets frozen. He gets frozen yep. when things go wrong. So that's where we're at right now.
That is where we're at. So right now we just have to watch, Paul, and see what happens starting tonight, and we'll hear you on pregame later on tonight here.
Sounds good. Take care.
Thanks, Paul. Always good to talk to you there. Paul Hamilton on the Western Hotline. Sabres Flyers tonight, 7:30 face-off. Pregame starting at 6:30 here on WGR. We'll take a timeout, wrap up the show, and then hand it off to Sabres Live on the other side. This is the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
If you have a podcast and want to monetize it stress-free, you need the Odyssey Creator Lab. We'll host your podcast for free, and our experienced sales team brings in the advertisers and the revenue. Easy. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.
This is not on my Spotify Wrapped. But it's a funky jam. It's how things go. Thanks to Sal Capaccio and Paul Hamilton joining us here today on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show as we're getting you through a frigid, windy Wednesday here. And the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. Bills get back to practice. We will hear from Sean McDermott. We will get the updated injury report for the Bills. That's going to be a hugie. Why? Because you're looking at the health of Deion Dawkins, Spencer Brown. Is there progress there? Joshua Palmer, Dalton Kincaid. Is the offense able to get themselves back healthy? And then, of course, Joey Bosa, who left that game against Pittsburgh with the hamstring injury. The Bills' pass rush has already been anemic, even with Bosa banged up and in the lineup still. If Bosa doesn't play, I'm a lot more nervous about being able to make Joe Burrow a little bit more uncomfortable. Because the Bengals have Ja'Marr Chase, they have T. Higgins, they have that elite passing game. They are also able to run the football pretty well. And if you don't have a defensive end able to pin their ears back and be able to tee off, well, there's a bit of a problem there. Bills pass rush has to be better than the rest of the roster anyway. Joey Bosa's sack was the first one in six quarters for the Bills. The rest of the roster, and I'm looking at Greg Rousseau in particular here, the rest of the roster has to be better. You need more from Rousseau, Epinesa, Solomon when it comes to production and numbers at this point. So we'll see what happens. They're going to be back on the practice field. Walkthrough today. Injury report today. Head coach Sean McDermott speaking as well. So we'll get a little bit more clarity on the lineup and how it's going to be looking for the weekend. But until then, we've got plenty of work to do. Derek Kramer here with you. Thanks for listening in on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. We'll be right back at it tomorrow, same time at 10 a.m. Sabres Live is coming up next. Getting you ready for the six-game road trip. And again, face-off 7:30 here on WGR.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Make money from your podcast with the Odyssey Creator Lab. You create the show, we bring the advertisers. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com.